Where the Legends Play, Willie 1550 and 98.7. Hello there, I'm Kenny Graves, and so proud to have on the line with me a gentleman with 22 studio albums and 25 hit singles, including 20 top 10 hits and 7 number ones. He won the Academy of Country Music Award for Male Vocalist of the Year. He is a 2-time winner of the CMA Male Vocalist of the Year Award. He won CMA's Song of the Year in 1985. He won a Grammy for Top Male Vocal Performance in 1985. And my friends, he plays a really mean saxophone. I'm talking about country superstar and patriotic American Lee Greenwood. Hello, Lee. How are you, sir?
Hello, Kenny. Man, that's a heck of an introduction. I don't think I've ever heard that good. That's good, man.
I'll take that as a high endorsement. I appreciate that. I thank you for taking the time to sit down and have a little chat with our listeners.
I'd be happy to, and nice to talk to you down there in Texas.
Oh, yeah, we're looking forward to having you. You're going to be just our neighboring town of Brenham, and we'll be getting to that date in just a little bit. Of course, you can always get tickets. That's in August, but you can go to LeeGreenwood.com and get tickets for that. But, Lee, you grew up out in California on a poultry farm, if I'm reading correctly, and you began singing in church like a lot of artists did. You started around the age of 7. What music or artist influenced you at a young age?
Well, oddly enough, there wasn't a lot of influencing where I was raised in Sacramento. I listened to the songs on the radio, all the rock bands of that era. And I, as you mentioned, I played saxophone in nightclubs when I was 12 and 13 years old. I listened to a variety of artists, Peeble Bryson, Ray Charles, Kenny Rogers, all who had an impact on me. Of course, Sam Cooke, which I really loved his style. And I don't know why I just have like a soulful flavor to my voice, but I always have. And I loved rhythm and blues and jazz. And it wasn't until I got to Nashville, Tennessee that I really sunk my teeth into my country music career.
And you brought that soulfulness in your voice along with it. That worked out really well, I think.
But you see, Graham Brown and I kind of have the same sound, you know. And I was recently on a picture with him called Ticket to Nashville that will be released in the fall on in the theaters, and he and I have kind of the same voice.
I can hear that, and I just had T. Graham on last week, so I may have to hit him up and ask him about that show. He forgot to mention that, but that's very cool. Now, you started some bands. You were at a pretty young age. How old were you when you started your first actual band?
I was probably 12 or 13. It was called the Moonbeams. And we were the kind of band where we sat down behind a little orchestra, I forget what you call them, little cardboard things. You put your name on in the front of them. And most of the bands of those eras, the Dorsey Brothers and any of those big bands that they played for dances, you would sit down behind them, and it was mostly a horn band. My sister played piano in it, Patricia. And so then it was a few years before I developed a little bit more of a sense of entertainment, and then we started standing and playing, and I got another band called the Apollos. And the Apollos is the band that I left home with at 16 years old and went to Nevada and started playing at the Stardust Hotel in 1961.
Wow. And then you were working steady with music, and in 1979, you got discovered by a gentleman named Larry McFadden, who would become your manager.
Yeah, Larry was the bass player for Mel Tillis, and he'd been with him 14 years and was actually wanting to get off the road and find an artist to manage. We met out in Nevada. I was playing in a club in Reno, and he asked me if I want to go to Nashville, and I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm that kind of guy that country music's gonna like, and he thought I would be, and well, the rest was history. When I moved there and started recording, that I embraced the city and country music embraced me.
Indeed, it did. Your first album was released and produced 1 top 20, 2 top 10s, and 1 top 5. So, what was it like when you got your first album out and had that immediate success once your music was released nationally to the audience?
Well, on that first album, which was called Inside Out, we did have 4 hit singles. It Turns Me Inside Out and She's Lying, both written by Jan Crutchfield, my producer's brother. from Paducah, Kentucky. Ain't No Trick was actually a hit in Texas. And,
yes, it was.
Houston actually was the radio station, KIKK, that picked that song to be a hit, and it was. Big hit in North Carolina as well at the same time. And then, of course, we had a song on the album I wrote for Kenny Rogers called The Love Song, which went number one for him. So I also had the credit of having that on my album. And the first time I ever heard a band playing my song in a bar was in Oklahoma, and I pulled in there to play the fair or something, and I heard the band playing it, and I couldn't believe they were actually playing a song that I had recorded. It was just so cool.
And also on that first album, I believe, was Ring on Her Finger, Time on Her Hands.
Yeah, that was our second number one release off that album, and we had very cautiously decided if we could release that, because the first time anyone had ever said she stood before God. And Jerry and I talked about releasing that, and said this is a little controversial or not, and we just decided at the end, after talking to our pastor, that it was not a problem for them. And it was very emotional. It was a very strong song written by Marion Kennedy, Pam Rose, and Don Goodman, who also wrote us Dixie Road on a later album.
And that song did stand the test of time. Very popular still today. Of course, you had your success was immense. It continued into the 90s. And in 1995, you wanted to take a little bit of a break. You want to talk about that?
Yes. After touring with Alabama and the Oak Ridge Boys and Barbara Mandrell and a variety of artists, I just thought, my wife and I were married in 92, and it was kind of a time to do something a little bit different. We built our own theater in East Tennessee near Dollywood, and we were sequestered there for 5 years while we had a one-year-old when we started and another child while we were there. So Dalton and Parker now are 25 and 21. As we look back on that decision, it was a good time to be with young children while I wasn't touring, but it didn't take me long to get back on the road because I got a little bit bored.
Yes, sir. And let's rewind just a little bit. You've got to tell us about your iconic signature song. It's kind of an unofficial second national anthem, God Bless the USA. How did writing and recording that change your life?
Well, you're right. It did change it. I have lived with that song since I wrote it in 1983 in the back of my bus one day between Arkansas and Texas. And it has meant an awful lot to an awful lot of people for different reasons. And during the Gulf War, of course, I worked with several presidents. During Katrina, I went to the South at the Gulf to try to help people rebuild. And then after 2001, the attack on America, I went to New York three times to help the United States once again unify. And it was an interesting time, but God Bless USA is a huge umbrella over my career, but it is not a parachute. I mean, I continue to be artistic and continue to write music and continue to record.
Yes, sir. And you've also been the voice behind some iconic commercial jingles. How early did that success start for you?
Well, it actually came to me from the recording engineer for the Oak Ridge Boys, and he had some auditions in Nashville for the McDonald's company. And I went and auditioned for them, and they liked my voice so much, we started doing those. So for 2.5 years, I did more than 36 McDonald's jingles and then 126 Coors jingles. And they were all recorded in Chicago at Universal Recorders long before Pro Tools. So there were long, exhausting days and an immense amount of time in the studio. But I kind of enjoyed it because it's kind of like poking fun at the recording industry a little bit when you have a jingle, particularly one that does so very well, and it kind of makes the public laugh at you a little. I think it's a good thing.
I think so, too. Plus, it gives you a great spotlight on a national audience. They catch you at weird times when they don't even know they're hearing it, and then they hear it, and if it's catchy, they remember it. That's the whole key.
Well, they remember your voice, that's for sure.
Absolutely, they do. Now, President George W. Bush appointed you to serve on the National Endowment of the Arts Council, and I know you were there for a long time. Are you still on that council today?
I am. At longest, probably running member of any council member, and I've also been appointed to the Kennedy Center trustee by President Trump, and that's just recently, over the last year.
Quite an honor. Also, you're such a well-rounded guy. In 2012, you released a best-selling children's book. You want to tell us about that project?
Yeah, when our boys were very young, my wife and I read to them sitting in a rocking chair, and kids are fascinated by books, particularly illustrated books rather than photograph books or just words. And so I thought, let's just have a book that has a good patriotic lesson as well as illustrations about our country. It's called Proud to be an American, and it's available on my website. It's a hardback book, and it really is a great tool for grandparents and parents to teach your kids how to read.
Fantastic. And like I said earlier when we started off, you're going to be playing a show in Brenham, Texas. It's our neighboring town, Saturday, August 29th. You'll be at the Barnhill Center at Historic Simon Theater. So, and you can get tickets to that show at LeeGreenwood.com. I will reach out to him and see if maybe I can get a couple of tickets to give away on the air, too. And I look forward to seeing you live again. I think the last time I caught you live was 88 or 89. You had finished up one of your so maybe Touch and Go Crazy, and you tore into a saxophone solo that was just iconic at the time. I'd not seen anything quite like it. And you quit, and you said, "Let's see Randy Travis do that." And I thought, I've always remembered that. That was fantastic.
Well, thank you. It is an instrument I've played since I was about 10 years old.
Oh, wow. Well, you were well seasoned on it for sure. Now, one thing I want to ask you, because country music touches people in a way other types of music a lot of times do not. People take their lyrics and their songs very personal. Can you share a story a fan has shared with you that you've carried with you and in your memory and you think about often, just a positive story that someone said your music made on their life?
Well, I've had more than one young artist come up to me in Nashville who has come to make their stardom, who have told me that they got into the business because of my music and what it meant to them. And I'm just sometimes thrilled to know that a song like Somebody's Gonna Love You, which is kind of my James Taylor approach to country, it crossed over so that it won a lot of fans from the AC market, adult contemporary, into the country field. Because we have a wide type of country artists, everywhere from Kenny and myself and Ray Stevens, and then you have the Haddocks from Oklahoma and Texas and Georgia, and there's a variety of types, of course, of West Virginia bluegrass, and just, you know, if you put it all together, it's a very wide field. So if you can win fans from other genres into your music, it really expands it in Nashville, and of course that benefits all of us who work there.
Yes, sir, and you had a lot of crossover hits and success in your career. IOU was one of them I really remember buying the 45 as a young man, and I remember it was very popular with pretty much everybody across the board in middle school, I believe it was, or maybe early high school. But it was one of those songs that it just fit in with every crowd. So, and you had you had a lot of success like that. And finally, tell folks how they can find you and your music and find you on social media.
Well, as you might know, we recently had a Facebook live stream show on Memorial Day because we were unable to tour because of the pandemic. And you can find a lot of that kind of video and also our merchandise on LeeGreenwood.com. And we are up and running in Nashville and mailing out things. So if you want to find out what our touring schedule still looks like after it's been shredded with the pandemic, why, just go on our website and find out where the dates are still holding true, and we'll tour this country and bring us all back together.
Looking forward to that, and we look forward to seeing you in August right down here at our neighboring town of Brenham. Lee Greenwood, thank you so much, sir.
All right, thank you, Kenny.
You betcha. For Lee Greenwood, I'm Kenny Graves here on Willie 1550 and 98.7.